You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. It is great to be here for the third hour and a lot to do. The remainder of the program, Armin Katayan will join us in a few minutes. His book about Tiger Woods has been made into a documentary. He also did a 60 Minutes profile several years ago of Nick Saban. We'll talk about both of them when we were joined with him. Bruce Feldman was with us earlier. Mark Bryant Tyson, the grandson of the legendary coach, was with us during the last hour. Let's check in with John, who is up next in Pensacola, Florida. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey there. How are you?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
I have a question about this SEC ESPN contract. Has anyone actually kind of crunched numbers on that? And I guess my question is, how is that going to affect the individual schools in the SEC?
Well, it will affect them greatly. Once it, you know, we're talking about a contract. I'm spitballing here with CBS that paid the SEC that was worth about $50 million a year. This one's worth about $350 million. So you start breaking that down 14 ways, and there will be a significantly larger amount of money. This is separate, by the way, from the SEC network revenues, but it will bring a tremendous revenue to each school.
Okay, well, I do appreciate that. I mean, is it going to be kind of split evenly, or is
yeah? The way the SEC works, and I don't know the exact financials, but the conference receives a share, and then it's equally divided among the other 14 schools.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the information. You have a good day, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. How about Jimmy, who is in Alabama? Hey, Jimmy, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Hey, Jimmy, thanks. Good to have you on.
Hey, Paul, good to talk to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I just want to mention this thing about this debate about who's the greatest, Bear or Saban.
Okay.
I just real quick, I want to tell you a little story about it. I was in Vietnam in the late 60s. We caught some bad guys. We do what we normally do, bound them, gagged them, blindfolded them, stripped them down, stripped this one individual down. And there was a T-shirt, great pair, says the Bear, the golden flake potato chips, and the Coca-Cola.
Now, Jimmy, we're talking
about anyone.
We're talking about a Vietnamese?
Yes, a bad guy.
Oh, my goodness.
What I thought was a bad guy turned out to be a female till we took the shirt off of her. And it was funny for just a few seconds, and then it kind of dawned on me, where in the heck does she get this shirt? Do you remember the shirt? Remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, I think if I remember correctly, when Coach Bryant would say, great pair says the Bear, he was talking about Golden Flake and Coca-Cola, was he not?
And that was what was on the T-shirt, right at the bottom of the T-shirt. That was a picture of Coach Bryant. And at the bottom says, great pair, says the Bear. Well, my buddies had no idea what that meant. I did. But like I say, it bothered me because Where does she get the shirt? Well, the French had, you know, controlled Vietnam for a long time before the U.S. got there. So I'm thinking, well, maybe some relative had been in the state, had brought clothes to the north, you know, and gave it to the troops before they came south, into South Vietnam. But it was just, wow, you know, what do we do? Well, we do what we normally do, and which wasn't good. And I'm sorry to say that. I've never talked about it. But anyway, it was just the thing that when you say, who's the best? Well, it's like saying, if you've been married twice, was your first one the best or your second one the best? You know, it's kind of hard to say. Who's the best? They're both equal. Saban is no better than Bear, and Bear was no better than Saban. But I love both of them, and I thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, thank you. That is an extraordinary story, Jimmy. I appreciate it. I mean, you're right. It's not humorous, except there's nothing humorous about Vietnam. But it's an amazing story. Carlos is up next in New Jersey. Hey, Carlos.
Hey, how are you, Paul? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've been watching your show today, and thank you for you and all your networking. I know there's a lot of people in the background to help you do what you do. I worked for ABC for a while, and I know all the non-spoken people in the background and behind the stages and the cameras that do a lot of work for you guys. So thank you on behalf of your entire team. Thank you. My question is, with all the talk about Tennessee now and Coach Pruitt and being a Jersey fan, and now I understand how the fan base rebelled against Coach Chiano when he was supposed to get hired at Tennessee. And now he's at Rutgers, and he's doing a pretty good job turning it around. Do you think they should have maybe calmed their nerves and gave him a chance at Tennessee just in retrospect? Or would you say more?
Yeah, I really thought what happened to Coach Chiano was unfair, but it happened and it's over with. But they still could have gotten a good coach. The coaching search was bungled from the beginning. And Chiano, I believe, was the original choice. But, you know, ultimately, it doesn't matter. They ended up with Jeremy Pruitt, and now they have to deal with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
And good luck to the rest of you guys in 2021.
Thank you for the kind words. I mean, don't forget, Alabama tried to get Nick Saban and Steve Spurrier in, 2006. Both turned it down, and they offered the job to Rich Rodriguez. He initially accepted. He ultimately changed his mind, and Nick Saban decided to come after all. We are up against a break. A lot to do remaining on our show. We hope you'll stick around. Armin Katayan, great journalist, will join us in a few minutes to talk about the new documentary, Tiger, on HBO. We'll also ask him what he thinks of Nick Saban, who he knows very well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back. Great to have all of you here, and really looking forward to talking to our next guest, Armin Katayan, one of the just most remarkable sports journalists in my lifetime. And we've talked to him over the years for his book. He did a tremendous book on college football, and his last book that we talked to him about, Tiger, is now an HBO documentary. Armin, it is wonderful to talk to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
We're doing okay, and I definitely want to talk about the Tiger documentary. We talked to the director the other day, but I can't have you on this week of all weeks and not ask you about Nick Saban. And for those, the audience has been with us a long time, knows, because we talked about it. Not only did you interview Saban for your book, you profiled him for 60 Minutes a number of years ago, and you know him fairly well. And you went back and did another, I think, podcast with him a couple of years ago. Or video cast.
Yeah, I did The Athletic. I did that three-part thing on The Athletic a couple of years ago, and I'm glad you asked. I was hoping you would. And I mean, obviously, you guys have been talking about it a ton, but just for me personally, it was, you could just see how really emotional Nick was about this, and how this team, what he called the ultimate team, was the epitome of the process and the Nick Saban way. And you know, you think about everything that Alabama program demands of 18 to 22 year old kids, and this whole pursuit of perfection and, you know, play the play and all of that. And I think I'm going back now, whatever it could be, I don't know, 6 or 7 years having been around that program. And I sensed it in talking to some people within the program that this was the team for him. As you know, he said, when your best players are your best people, I mean, what they contribute in a locker room is just extraordinary. So I was so happy for him, and I'm so happy for the kids and the program. And I was just, a couple other things that came to mind was somebody was talking to me about Carl Icahn, as you well know, is a billionaire activist investor in all sorts of companies, and has bought his way onto several boards. And the one thing he always looked at, somebody told me, was when he was trying to determine whether he would buy a corporation and keep or dismiss a CEO, he said the CEO was far and away the single most important person in that corporation in judging the success or failure of an organization. And as you know, Nick always sees the Alabama football program as an organization, and he is the CEO of $150 million-plus dollar a year corporation. And for him to be able to do what he's done, to win as many national championships now, a record number, and I'm just so – it's nice to see things like that happen to a group of kids who really deserved it. And, you know, at 69, I still marvel, and I'm talking Nick at 69. I mean, he's the most passionate, disciplined, inspiring coach I've ever run across in my lifetime, and now covering sports, and we're pushing 40-something years.
And Armin, I guess can't help but get the image of Paul Bryant. You know, I was sitting there on that day that he retired, looking at him at 69, and you know, he had some health issues, but, and you certainly covered sports at the end of his career. I mean, you juxtapose Nick Saban to 69 and Coach Bryant, and we're not really talking about the same age.
No, it was interesting. You know, when I interviewed Nick for The Athletic about a year and a half ago, I asked him about Coach Bryant, because, you know, Coach Bryant retired because he didn't feel like he could really coach to the level that he wanted to coach anymore. And we were talking about Nick's future, and that's always a dicey subject with him. You know, you can get one of those looks, Paul, and you've got him, where he just looks at you like, you know, really? You're going to go there with a question? And I asked him about it. I said, you know, Coach Bryant died very soon after he retired from coaching. And I said, Nick, when you think about your retirement, what are you thinking? He told me this story about when he was a little kid, and he had, you know, he was always afraid of this monster in his closet. And he was always concerned about that there was this monster in his closet.
And so he said, you know, for me, retirement is like that monster in my closet. I'm afraid to open that door because I'm not sure what's in there, you know, retirement, what's in there. And I honestly, being around him and what he has done, and now you're seeing, and I know you're reporting that, you know, just another turnover on the coaching staff with all the people going with Sark to Texas and all that stuff. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think his coaching staff from 17 to now, at least the main guys, it's a complete turnover. And he's
completely,
you know, completely. I mean, who does that? You know, and I was thinking, if you go back and you look at some of the great football programs in the history of college football, and I'm just talking recent memory, you can talk Nebraska with Tom Osborne, Bobby Bowden at Florida State, Joe Paterno at Penn State, Bo Schembechler, Johnny Robinson, Urban Meyer, even Mac Brown. They've all had these runs, you know, mini runs, but nobody has had a run like Nick has had. And how in the world he's been able to sustain that, you know, is because he's trying to be perfect every single day, and he's the most disciplined person I've ever run across in my life. I can't spend too much time around him because I just feel like I just want to crawl into a fetal position at the end of the day and go, really? You know, you do the same thing every day, and you do it the same way all the time, and it's really successful. So I'm just really – and, I know Terry well, and I just know how emotional it's been for the family and for her week in and week out. And I just hope he's not doing something football-related right now, but I dare say he probably is.
You know the answer to that. Speaking of someone who is a perfectionist, the subject of your book and this latest HBO documentary. I thought you were describing Tiger Woods for a minute there.
I think I was. You know, it's like they're you know, complicated, committed to perfection. You know, they're in the same boat.
I know it's. I know the book was an extraordinary experience for you, but you are fairly well traveled in film with your many years at CBS, and you've done a lot in that regard. What was this experience like? You know, moving the written word to the screen.
It was really gratifying in the end, I have to say, Paul. First of all, when Alex Gibney, the Oscar-winning director, who's probably the best documentary film director in the business, optioned the rights to the book. Jeff and I were, Jeff Benedict, as you well know, my co-author. I mean, we were just thrilled to be in that kind of world with Alex. And then when he brought in as the two directors, Matt Heineman, who had won an Emmy for directing Cartel, and Matt Hamacek, who had been Emmy nominated for editing the Amanda Knox documentary, we knew we were in good hands. And then Alex's team, this Jigsaw production team, with just an all-star team of talent, from producers to directors to archival to editors and everybody. And so, you know, our job was to really, our book is listed as inspired by in the film, and it's, I fair to say, the basis of the documentary. You know, you think about it in terms of Tiger's journey. It's a roadmap. You get on certain places and off in certain places based upon, in large measure, our reporting. But it's an extraordinary achievement, I believe, because, A, they were able, with our help, to get a lot of people to sit in a chair that otherwise may not have trusted the filmmakers. But, B, to have Rachel Yucatel in the film, and she's a big part of Part 2 coming up Sunday night. And, you know, Nick Faldo and Brian Gumbel and Stevie Williams and people of that ilk to be in the film. So I'm very proud of it. I think it's an incredible effort, and I think the reviews have been nothing short of sensational. So in the end, I think it really humanizes Tiger in a way that he's never been humanized before. It's one thing, as you well know, to write a book and tell stories. It's another thing to witness it on film with A, people talking, and B, the archival footage and the golf footage in these two parts is just sensational. So, you know, I'm gonna enjoy myself Sunday night. I'm going to sit there and watch it. I've seen, you know, the final cut, but it was funny. Last Sunday night, I was with Dee Dee, my wife, and our oldest daughter, Kristen, and her boyfriend. And I tried to watch it as a first-time viewer, and I was really caught up in it. And that made me feel good, because storytelling is kind of what I do for a living, and I was just, like, really caught up in the storytelling.
And Armin, I can't claim I've ever done this, but I would think that's difficult, because sometimes you're so overwhelmed by the process. So here's a Saban word I'm using with you, that it isn't easy to enjoy something, because your mind is going a million different directions.
You're right. It's and I think about the process for the film directors, because, you know, our book was 400 pages. The two-part documentary is about 3 hours and 15 minutes. You have to make some very difficult choices as to how long what the journey is. How long do you stay in certain places of Tiger's life? And when you move on, how do you move on? And who do you move on with? And, you know, what moments are the moments that you really want to showcase for the audience? And, you know, I've been living in Tiger's world now, Paul, for the better part of 5 years. I think I just hung up my amateur psychologist shingle about 6 months ago. So I'm just watching it now as somebody that is really grateful for the opportunity to work with Alex and the team that he put together. And actually there's if you can believe it, there's a scripted series being written right now. That would be multi-part, probably 6 to 8, based on the book as well, from a production company that is a pretty big deal in Hollywood that was behind Ozark and The House of Cards. So just when you think, you know, we're walking out the door, we're coming back in with something else, I think.
Well, that sounds wild. And I know you've dealt in the world of Hollywood before, yeah. And I think it's pretty much unlike any other world out there, Armin, especially for a couple of scrubs like us.
Well, you've been in the middle of it. What's it like for you? I mean, you must have been, you know, those development meetings and all the startup, and then with the pandemic. And, you know, I've had several projects that were, I thought were greenlit, and then they've, you know, gone to yellow or red. And, it's, you know, it's just one of those things where I just go, you know what? In fact, this week, it's weird. Somebody who used to be at 30 for 30 is now at Netflix, emailed me and said, you know, that project that 30 for 30 was looking at, you know, we're really interested here at Netflix as a docuseries. And I was like, man, when it rains, it pours. So, you know, I'm just trying to keep an even keel, because it's, as you well know, you can get really excited about something, and then the next thing you know, nobody's returning your calls.
No, and I have people say this to me, but I will say it to you. For people that know Armin as an author and as a 60 Minutes correspondent and as a documentarian, you missed my favorite part of his career when he was the investigative reporter at Sports Illustrated. And, I mean, there have not been many quite like him since. I don't know if there have been any like him. Maybe a handful that are in the same category. But you were unbelievable and an inspiration to somebody like me who was at the next iteration of the aspiring journalist.
Well, those are some... I look back on those days. I just got a Christmas letter from Doug Mooney.
Oh, my goodness.
You know.
Oh, yes.
He's out in Colorado. And he writes, you know, you know how Looney used to write for the magazine. That man has a smirk in just about every sentence he ever writes. And he writes these just hysterical Christmas letters about what's happening with he and Marianne. And, you know, we've been communicating, and, you know, we were like Batman and Robin when we would go out on those investigative pieces. And, you know, Doug, I don't think he ever ate anything, and he barely slept. And so, you know, with him, it would be like, you know, we would drop in on a Tuesday afternoon or a Monday night. And in those days, those SI deadlines were hard on Sunday night. And, you know, we had to be 2 or 3 days ahead of what the local reporters were working on. And, you know, whether it was the Tulane point shaving scandal or the Phoenix Sun scandal or you name it scandal, you know, to have something fresh in the magazine when it showed up on people's doorsteps and in their mailboxes on Thursday, I mean, that was some kind of, you know, mountain to climb. And I wouldn't want to climb it with anybody but Doug Mooney, because he was as good as it gets in those kinds of moments.
Armin, a quick story. I did a compilation of my columns many years ago, and I asked Doug to do the foreword, and he said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You know, I do have to tell the truth in that." I said, "Okay."
Yeah. That's Looney.
And he did a great job. I could talk to you forever, but we'll do this again soon. Armin, what a thrill to have you on, especially this week. Not only about Tiger, but about Nick Saban.
Thanks, Paul. I've done a lot of these. I look forward to yours the most of them all. I really do. I love talking to you. I have such great respect for you, and you know, I'll answer your phone calls and your requests anytime you want.
Well, I can't wait to see you one of these days when we're allowed to go outside again. Armin, thank you very much.
No kidding.
Congratulations.
You bet, Paul.
You bet.
Good talking to you.
Armin Katayan, the New York Times bestselling author, the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Tiger, which is now an HBO documentary. We are taking a break. Back with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we're back, and Frank is up next. Hey, Frank, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Paul, I just want to find out so I can win my argument. That's Rod Chop. What do you know about the new offensive coordinator for Alabama? What do you know about him?
Well, he hasn't been named officially yet, Frank, but Bill O'Brien is a longtime coordinator under Bill Belichick. He took Joe Paterno's place at Penn State and really did a fabulous job. The job he did there is still referenced as one of the better coaching jobs we've ever seen because of the circumstances. He went to the Houston Texans as the head coach and just got fired recently.
Okay. So do you think he'll work out real good if he is named coach or the
Well, he's got a great reputation, and I do think he will be good if he gets the job, which I think he will. Kevin is up next. Kevin, welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. I hope you're well.
I am. Thank you.
Listen, I just wanted to follow up on this gentleman, Josh, yesterday, talking about Nick Saban retiring and that would fix college football. I don't think anybody's really articulated if it would fix some certain things. So let's just go through 4 or 5 points here and see if Nick Saban retires, this solves this problem. So if Nick Saban retires, is that going to get Mr. Yellowwood out of the film room and the quarterback room at Auburn?
I don't think it will have anything to do with it, Kevin.
Correct. If Nick Saban retires, will that make Kirby Smart quit getting tight in close games in the second half?
Well, it might help him against Alabama, but it probably wouldn't have helped him against anyone else.
Correct. If Nick Saban retires, is that going to make anybody smarter in the Tennessee football operations? Is it going to make them smarter than the Rock?
No, absolutely not.
Correct. At Michigan, will it turn Jim Harbaugh into John Harbaugh?
No. This is the easiest test I've had in a long time. No.
Well, let's bring it home back to Birmingham. I know, Paul, you're in Birmingham a long time. I was born and raised in Birmingham. Will the money for the Alabama revenue for the Alabama football team, will that be transferred to UAB upon Nick Saban's retirement so we can buy out Dr. Ray Watts' clause.
No.
In his contract. See, I think Nick Saban retiring isn't going to have any effect on college football other than we just lose the bar of excellence that he's setting. And it really is a varied patchwork of tradition. And not every program's out there trying to be Alabama. And I just think Josh is seriously misguided. And there's some problems out in college football that everybody needs to correct on their own that do not bear any weight upon Nick Saban's employment status.
Kevin, thanks for the tutorial. Appreciate it. Mia is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Mia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have been blessed to have been born into a Bama family.
You, well, I like your. How old are you, Mia?
I'm 13.
You have a great attitude for a young person.
Thanks. I have a question about the returning players at Alabama.
Okay.
So, out of the four players who have declared to go pro, have you heard of anybody else like Dylan Moses?
I think he's still trying to decide. You know, what's interesting, Mia, is a lot of these players, I think he will, but a lot of these players have the option now to play another year. So, there's some tough decisions to make. It used to be easy. You had no choice. But in his case, I guess he could have another year if he wants it.
Yeah, I hope so, because I know his knee had been bothering him for a long time, and I'd like to see him return to full.
Yeah, he had a good year, but he was expected to have a monster year, but he is coming off of a serious injury, so I hope I don't know what he's going to do, but I hope he comes back.
Me too.
Well, Mia, you take care of yourself.
Thanks. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. I like it. Kids nowadays are counting their blessings because they were born into an Alabama family. That's interesting. Never heard that one before. Ronnie is up next. Hey, Ronnie, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today, man?
Ronnie, we're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I had a statement and a question. All these people talking about national championships and how Alabama's born, they're winning so many of them. But you look at these other places. My twin brother's an Auburn fan, and we're 60 years old, and I told him, at least you got to see one championship in your lifetime, bro. But anyway, they're not that easy to win. If you ask, Georgia fans, Auburn fans, or players, they'll tell you that.
They are not. They are not. You're right.
Yeah. Do you think there's going to be an A-Day game this year, a spring game, with what they've learned through the season?
Definitely.
Okay, good deal. I'd like to see that on TV then, see who's going to play. I appreciate it. You have a good day, man.
Thank you very much.
Roll Tide.
Okay. A lot of Alabama fans out today. We'll take a break. We still have more to come on the program. We invite you to give us a ring. It's been a busy one so far, and we still have some time left. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Great to have you here on a late Thursday afternoon. Jim is up next in Mississippi. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon.
I was inspired to call you about an hour and a half ago. A gentleman called in regarding Saban reaching out to Lewis's grandson. Well, I had a Saban story I want to share with you also, like hundreds of others. Thousands of other people do. In 2013, my son was diagnosed with cancer, and we were inpatient up in Memphis, St. Jude, for 2 years. Well, I guess it was in 2014, we were able to leave for a few days and actually got an invite to go watch practice, football practice, over at Alabama. And it was, I remember it was a cold, rainy morning. So the practice was inside the facilities. Well, once practice starts after so long, I'm sure you know this, that the media is asked to leave. Well, we were able to stay. And when practice was over, Saban came straight over to my son and I, which was kind of obvious. My son was, you know, kind of frail, thin, no hair. Walked over, introduced himself, shook hands, and asked my son what did he think about practice. And, of course, you got to understand a 14-year-old meeting Saban is kind of intimidated a little bit. Well, he said, well, I guess it was fine. And Saban said, well, it wasn't a crap. But he didn't say crap, but we got to work on this. We got to work on that. We got to do this. We got to do that. And so just for taking the time and coming straight to us after practice, it was just so amazing. It's just amazing how humble that guy can be, how stressed he can be on the field, and then come right off a few seconds later and just speak, you know. Very touching moment. And also, while we were up there in St. Jude, Bear Jones came to visit us one time. But, that's for a different call.
Jim, all the best. Thank you for sharing that story. That is amazing. We really appreciate it. It's quite a place, St. Jude. Ricky is up next in Mississippi. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Ricky, we're doing great.
Hey, that was a great story, man. I'm a Mississippi State fan, but I admire Nick Saban and what he's done for that program, and just you could just tell the genuineness in his demeanor, and when he talked about how he genuinely cares about his players, and that's what I always liked about him. You know, the national championships are great, and that's what he strives for, and that's kind of his DNA is to strive for excellence. But he's a people person first and foremost. And for those who feel like who have Alabama fatigue, and I get it. I mean, Bill Belichick with the Patriots, I get that. But I, as a Mississippi State fan, and we have opportunities to get a few 5-star players and a couple of 4-star players or maybe some 3-star players, and if you get the right coach, you have to have something to strive for, you know. And Alabama is the gold standard, you know. Because everybody is saying they want to fight for a national championship. Well, you're gonna have to go through Alabama if you're in the West. And I tell you, even Ole Miss, you know, with Lane Kiffin, with a couple of defensive dudes, he get on this side, and because winning always helps with recruits. You know, if you win, you're going to get recruits. So the guys over there in the West or in the East, all over the country, really, even over there in the Pac-12 or whatever, you got to start winning. You got to win, you know, and if you win, recruits will come. So as far as that goes, I just think that, just have to step your game up, because they got opportunities because you get all these, transfer portals and if they're not playing at these schools that, they don't feel like they're going to get a chance to play, they go somewhere else and they find some place where they think they can play. And that could be some of those teams like an Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Arkansas. So, in this day and time, it's even more possible now to because it's up to the other schools to catch up. I mean, you can't fault them for wanting to be the best. I just think the other schools, like State, they just got to step up. Recruit harder and have the right coaches.
Ricky, always great to hear from you. Thank you very much. We have had a busy one. On this afternoon, we talked to Bruce Feldman about the expected hire of Urban Meyer with the Jacksonville Jags. Mark Bryan Tyson was with us, the grandson of Paul Bryan. He's also the father of Paul Tyson, who is the third string quarterback on this current Alabama football team. We talked about he was also the presenter last night at the Paul Bryan Awards, where Nick Saban won National Coach of the Year. We're back with another hour. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.